Okay, welcome to listeners who've already joined us. It's a little after 3 o'clock in Prague, so I'll get started with some preliminaries while others continue to sign on, I hope. I'm Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. And my guest today on The Week Ahead in Russia is Irina Lagunina, associate standards editor and former director and special projects editor of the Russian service here at RFERL. Thanks for joining me, Irina.
Pleasure. Thank you, Steve.
All right, it's great to have you again. And as usual, in this very abnormal new normal, we're going to be talking about Russia's war on Ukraine, this time through the prism of some recent remarks by Russian President Vladimir Putin, who's been doing kind of a lot of talking lately as the war continues. It's kind of a disconnect between what he's saying and what's happening on the ground, I would say. The question sort of is, does what he says have any meaning? Now, as has become customary, we're conducting this on Twitter Spaces, but The Week Ahead in Russia will also be published as a podcast, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribing also enables you to listen to previous editions in this series. And as has also become customary, we'll be happy to take a few questions at the end. So if you'd like to ask a question, you can raise your hand by hitting the button in Twitter Spaces to request to speak. Other ways to ask a question are to send a DM or to post your question as a reply to the tweet pinned in this Twitter space. Now, before we really get started with the podcast, I'm going to go through some of those, some of that again for listeners who may just be joining us. And this live Twitter Spaces discussion will also be published as a podcast. You can subscribe to The Week Ahead in Russia on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And we'd love to take a few questions at the end. So if you'd like to ask a question, you can hit the button in Twitter Spaces to request to speak. You can also send us a direct message or post your question as a reply to the tweet pinned in this Twitter space. Now, to everyone who's just joined us, thank you very much for your interest, and welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and for those of you who may have joined us just now, my guest is Irina Lagunina, Associate Standards Editor and former Director and Special Projects Editor of the Russian Service here at RFERL. Welcome, Irina. Okay, I think we're having a little technical problem, so I'll just go ahead and get started with the first topic that I'll be that we'll be discussing. This podcast is called The Week Ahead in Russia, but as sometimes occurs, we're dwelling on some events that have happened over the past week or so. Since we last had Irina on the podcast, Putin has made some remarks that have attracted a lot of attention, and I want to discuss them a bit. Basically to parse them and see what you think about whether what he's saying tells us anything meaningful about the war, in Ukraine, the war that he's unleashed against Ukraine. Or should I say really, I should say escalate the war that he's escalated, because, the war actually began over 8 years ago now when, Russia backed forces, in some cases led by Russians, seized parts of Ukraine's Donetsk and Luhansk regions, the area known as the Donbass. First of all, Putin spoke on the 300 or marking the 350th anniversary of Peter the Great's birth. Putin asserted that territorial gains the Tsar made at war with Sweden amounted not to Russia seizing territory, but to Russia returning territory, implying that it was rightly Russia's to begin with, and also strengthening Russia. And then he drew a direct parallel with his war on Ukraine, without actually mentioning Ukraine, but saying with a smirk that, quote, apparently it has also fallen to us to return and strengthen. Now, Putin has frequently made the false claim or suggestion that Ukraine has no right to sovereignty. This is 30 years after Ukraine and Russia, in fact, gained independence in the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. But here I'd say that he went a bit further, and many observers said, look, he just admitted that this is simply a war of conquest, kind of imperialist land grab, and also an attempt to kind of turn back the clock back to the Soviet era. Because, of course, he's used other and maybe slightly more complex arguments to attempt to justify the unprovoked invasion of Ukraine in the past and the death, suffering, and destruction that it has caused. So that was, and then last week, again in St. Petersburg at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, Putin once again claimed without evidence that the invasion on February 24th was a, quote, necessary decision that Russia was, quote, forced to make, unquote. He provided no specific evidence to back up this assertion, but he did use the false claim that Ukraine had been committing genocide in the Donbass, which is false. So why am I mentioning Putin's arguments if they are provided without evidence, or why am I mentioning his claims if they're false? The answer is that I'm trying to determine whether they're meaningful in any way. Does Putin comparing himself to Peter the Great or claiming Russia was forced to invade Ukraine, you know, tell us anything about what may happen next week or next month or next year? Hopefully Irina can speak. We'll find out in a minute. So my question is...
Yes, I can.
Oh, great. Thanks, Irina. A little problem earlier. So my question is, what's your take on Putin's recent remarks? And about this week in particular, I guess, European Union leaders are expected to approve EU candidate status for Ukraine at a summit on Thursday and Friday. And Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is predicting a Russian escalation ahead of that. Is this week going to be important in terms of the course of the war?
Well, Steve, first of all, sorry for the technical problems that I had. It's actually not a microphone this time. It's an internet that all of a sudden disconnected. Nonetheless, addressing several of your very, very difficult questions. Well, first of all, will this week be important in the course of war? Yes, regardless of Putin's statements during the Economic Forum and regardless of what he said about himself as a Tsar, Peter the Great, or, the territorial integrity of Ukraine, this week will be important just because the conflict really seriously intensified in the east of Ukraine. Even though there is some counter attacks or counter measures taken by the Ukrainian army around Zaporizhia area, the situation around Severodonetsk is very, very difficult, and Russia is steadily gaining some sort of some territories there and having some sort of victory, if you can say so, in grabbing this pockets of land. But this is very important in terms of the control of the whole area. And I think both sides are understanding this, of course, and that's why the very fierce fighting is going on there for quite a time. But right now it did intensify. So this will decide and the course of the war as it goes on. And this is now a very, very difficult situation. So that's the first thing. So it will be decisive. Of course, this week. Regarding what the European Union will decide, Putin himself several times said that Russia does not see Ukraine joining the European Union as a threat. Well, that was publicly said. Whether he can change his opinion, of course, but such statement was made. And in general, the European Union was not considered in Russian propaganda as a direct threat. Probably not friendly union, but definitely not the same attitude as Russia has towards NATO. So whether it will change anything in the course of war, I don't think so. I don't think so because the war will go on regardless of whether Ukraine is a candidate to join European Union or not. The war will go on for a completely different reason. And the reason actually was reiterated by Putin again during the St. Petersburg Forum. Where he said that he actually gave his so-called history of Ukraine, which was based on absolutely false facts and false interpretation of history. But he basically said that when Ukraine joined the Russian Empire, it joined only with three provinces, which was the Kiev area, Zhytomyr area and Chernigov. This is like the central part of Ukraine, without its eastern part and western part. And that's probably what Putin sees as the kind of non-Russian territory. The rest is either traditional Russian territories, or as he said, and once again, this is completely false statement, that Stalin actually gave the western part of Ukraine to Ukraine as a present. So it was Stalin who conquered this from the west, from Germany, Hungary, and Austria, and then gave it to Ukraine as a present. That was that is practically a direct quote from Putin, as he put it. So once again, Putin denies Ukraine the right to national identity, the right to statehood, the right to independent existence. And this is the cause of this war. This is the real reason why Russia went to this war, because Putin just absolutely hates this neighboring state. Steve, you also said something about genocide in Donbas area. Well, this is something that the Russian propaganda was based on for the last 8 years, and this is the main slogan, the main motto of this so-called special military operation, as Kremlin calls this war. That was to stop the genocide, the alleged genocide that Ukrainian forces committed in Donbas, and to protect civilians in this area. And then the Russian propaganda goes further and says that, well, if we didn't start this military operation, they don't say war, of course, but if we didn't start this military operation, then Ukraine would invade us. And people really believe it. So Putin just repeated the same slogans that are on the air in Russia for the last year, that's for sure, very, very often. Steve?
Yes, thanks very much for that. And you know, I think he's also said such things to Western leaders whom he's met with. Lavrov has said similar, you know, and these are things that, as you and I both said, you know, it's simply false. You know, that does say something about the motives behind the war. And I tend to agree with you on the EU. It does seem like, you know, there's no, it does seem like the war will continue regardless of what the EU does in terms of inviting Ukraine to be a candidate for membership. And also once or whether, if it does that, you know, how long will it take Ukraine to become a member? That can take years, but you know, but I think it's kind of a secondary consideration now. And it's interesting because, you know, in some ways, a lot of this might not have happened, or a lot of what has happened since 2014 happened at least in part because of what Putin was apparently Putin's concern about Ukraine then in 2014 or actually 2013, planning to sign like a free trade agreement with the EU. And he put a lot of pressure, you know, both sort of carrot and stick pressure on Ukraine, on President Viktor Yanukovych at the time, to abandon that plan, and Yanukovych did so, and then the Maidan protests, kind of pro-European, pro-anti-corruption protests, occurred, and by February 2014, Yanukovych essentially fled, and fled to Russia, and then Russia seized Crimea and started fomenting the war in eastern Ukraine. So a lot of that, you know, whatever the actual motives of Putin have been, you know, that was kind of a factor in the way all this has this kind of the way everything's developed, and kind of the things that have happened in the 8 years before Putin launched this invasion. Now, the other thing I'd like to ask you about, Irina, I mentioned some of Putin's remarks came at this annual St. Petersburg, it's called the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. And I'd just like to ask you about your impression of this year's forum. In the past, this has really been the main event Putin has used to try to attract investment, including Western investment, to Russia. It's a bit of a maybe an echo of Peter the Great's, you know, window on the West. It's a way Putin invited people, including many Western, you know, leaders and business leaders to St. Petersburg, and use it as a showcase, you know, for the Russian economy and to try to attract investment, and to be seen with Western leaders and business leaders, to sort of as a boost to his image. But this year, while representatives of the Afghan Taliban attended, there were very few Westerners attending, of course. And Putin used his speech to lambaste the United States and the Western sanctions imposed on Russia in response to the invasion of Ukraine. You know, what did you think of the forum this year? Did it sort of say anything about where Russia is and where it's headed?
Well, Steve, I want to support your phrase that Putin showed it as a showcase in the past, because they are still trying to use it as a showcase forum. They claim, for example, that 127 countries participated in the forum, including the United States, Great Britain, Italy, for example. Which was quite interesting, because for domestic public, they tried to show that nothing, it's business like usual. Nothing happened. It's the same forum as it was in previous years. In reality, we calculated that there were people represent, I wouldn't even call them representatives, but, you know, business people from 69 countries of this list, but this list, official list, includes countries like Donetsk People's Republic and Luhansk People's Republic and Abkhazia. And since Russia recognized their independence, they list them as countries. So that's what they are trying to do to manipulate with the statistics. But if you look at the results of the forum, if you look at the list of official list, by the way, of the deals that were made there, there were practically no international deals. There was a panel with Egypt, there was a panel with Turkey, and some deals with China. And basically, that's it. One deal is between Russian railways and Kazakh railways. And that's it. The rest is domestic kind of, not even the deals, but the promises to develop certain territories, certain regions, Tulska region in Russia. Some promises made by Gazprom, some promises made by telecommunication companies, and that's it. So you don't need to have, a so-called international economic forum in order to make such deals. They should be, a part of the normal governmental work or business work within the country. You don't need to come to St. Petersburg to sign this. So the forum itself was, of course, completely different this year than the previous years. And the highlight of the forum was actually not Putin himself, but President of Kazakhstan Tokayev, who was asked if Kazakhstan will recognize the independence of Donbas, Donetsk and Luhansk, so-called People's Republics, and Tokayev said absolutely straightforward that no. And that was a kind of faux pas, that was a scandal during the forum. And strangely enough, it looks like it has immediate implications this week it's not confirmed yet, but it looks like the move that Russia made in Novorossiysk, it's actually decided to lock some Kazakh oil in Novorossiysk port under the pretext that they found some mines and explosives on the bottom of the sea that stayed there since the Second World War, and they need to demine it. So that's why the Kazakh oil now is got stuck in Novorossiysk. So that is seen. It's not confirmed once again, but that is seen as a direct reaction to what Tokayev said during the St. Petersburg Economic Forum. But it remains to be seen whether there will be other actions by Russia, regarding this interview that Tokayev gave in Putin's presence, by the way.
Yes, that's very interesting. If that is confirmed about kind of essentially holding the oil in a Russian port, Kazakh oil, it does sound like the way Russia has used kind of trade issues to punish or to signal to countries, especially in the former Soviet Union, that it doesn't like what they're doing politically or in terms of diplomacy. Things like saying that Georgian wine or Moldovan wine, is not healthy. It didn't pass tests. When there's some kind of a geopolitical dispute going on with Georgia or Moldova. So that sounds like somewhat of a similar thing and maybe kind of more consequential when we're talking about oil.
Exactly, Steve. And the same happened with Ukraine before the war. Every time Russia was angry with the political development in Ukraine or, you know, the changes that the Ukrainian government made, it cut off gas. And Europe twice was in a pretty bad situation in winter when the Russian gas was not flowing in here. So there is a pattern of Russia using energy as a weapon or as a tool to punish the states that were not behaving according to Russians' expectations and standards.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing I would just some of the background about the comments by Tokayev, the Kazakh president, Kasym Jomart Tokayev. It's quite interesting because, I mean, essentially there's part of northern Kazakhstan that Russian officials and particularly Russian lawmakers and others have kind of made clear that they feel Russia has designs on or should, you know, should essentially seize. And there's concerns, you know, this is an area where there are a lot of Russian speakers. It's obviously been a concern for the Kazakh leadership for years, these potential, you know, Russian designs on this the region of northern Kazakhstan. And of course, these concerns grew in 2014 when Russia seized Crimea and also the Russia-backed militants in eastern Ukraine seized parts of the Donbass. And it's something that has made it harder for Russia to, you know, maintain good relations with other country, with Kazakhstan, certainly, and with other countries in the former Soviet Union, because, however good or bad the relationship may be with Moscow at any given time, there's this concern that, well, is Russia just going to try to take part of our land? And of course, Putin's remarks about Peter the Great and returning territory, you know, are certainly must have increased those concerns. So it's kind of it's playing into, it's affecting Russia's efforts and Putin's efforts to maintain, you know, the influence that it can have in former Soviet Union. There was a lot of still a lot of questions about how much influence it can maintain and how the invasion of Ukraine has affected that.
Well, Steve, I can add if I may that there were such concerns that Russia will try to invade at least part of Kazakhstan when in January this year, when Russia sent troops during the demonstrations and riots in Kazakhstan in January. But Tokayev actually once again stressed that those troops were not there from Russia. They were from the Organization of Collective Defense, which unites several countries of the former Soviet Union, and actually stressed that it was not Russia. But frankly, we were all relieved when the Russian troops left Kazakhstan in January, and when it was kind of very well organized return back to Russia. Plus, one more factor right now is a lot of Russians who are horrified with the sanctions and with the war in Ukraine, mostly with the sanctions, frankly, went to Kazakhstan and found refuge there, or at least some temporary status there. It's mostly the IT sector of Russian economy who could not continue to work in Russia due to sanctions. That's why I'm saying that it's more economical, reasons to leave Russia than political or moral, if we talk about the war in Ukraine. But nonetheless, those people are bringing another picture of Russia to Kazakhstan, not the picture that Russian television is showing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And it's also happening in other former Soviet republics, including other ones, you know, like Kazakhstan that have decent relations with Russia. A lot of Russian IT professionals who were disgruntled, you know, angry about the war, worried about the sanctions, worried about their future, have gone to Armenia. There's Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, you know, many to Georgia, but of course, Georgian relations with Russia are not good. But so I think that's affecting, you know, as you say, rightly, in Kazakhstan, how, you know, people in Kazakhstan are seeing a view of Russia that, that they don't normally see, and that's also happening in other parts of the other countries in the region. So, you know, it is that's yet another kind of dynamic or consequence of the invasion of Ukraine. We're running short on time, but let's see if there are any questions and take a few questions if people have them. So you can request to speak. Okay, no questions so far. Just give it another moment. All right, let us wrap it up there then. Irina, thanks very much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting, Steve. It's a pleasure.
All right. Once again, I've been speaking to Irina Lagunina, Associate Standards Editor and former Director and Special Projects Editor of the Russian Service at RFERL. And my name is Steve Gutterman, Editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL. As I mentioned at the start, this conversation will also be published as a podcast. And you can subscribe to The Week Ahead in Russia and other RFERL podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So there are plenty of ways to do that. See, there may be a question. I'm sorry, I went ahead, but there may be one question. From Madi Kaparov.
That's right.
Can you please go ahead? Right. Thank
just
you.
A quick question. Should we expect a significant increase in propaganda attacks or perhaps any kind of hybrid warfare form against Kazakhstan from Russia?
I don't think that they can do more than they did already in terms of propaganda. Because it's already, you know, people often say that, well, you know, Russians watch television, but they have a free internet. And, you know, why can they get the proper picture of the world from internet? Because there is the same propaganda in internet. And what I see right now, even in the Kazakh you know, forums like I watch several bloggers, Russian speakers, of course. But I see that Russia is using internet as well and Kazakh media environment to push its narratives. But I don't see that how they can do more in this particular situation, because all the efforts now are turned to Ukraine. And I don't think that there is enough, you know, area to maneuver to try to punish, you know, President Takayev for his words in St. Petersburg.
Yeah,
got it. Thank you.
Thanks for the question. And I think, you know, Russia probably and the state media have to watch out. I mean, they don't want to, presumably, they don't want to start lumping other countries in with Ukraine. You know, it's just absolutely rabid anti-Ukrainian propaganda and anti-NATO and anti-West. But, you know, if they start bringing other countries into that, then, you know, they're going to alienate people even more, presumably. So now I see another question. So I guess I'll read that one out. Question is, how does this, from Dilshod Tajibayev, question is, how does this affect neighboring countries such as Uzbekistan, Irina?
I don't think that it affects somehow neighboring countries. I think that, you know, right now it's mostly what happened after the February 24th has more of an economic impact on the Central Asian countries, especially with the unstable ruble at the beginning. Now with, I would say, too much stable ruble, they started to control the rate of the national currency to the extent that it makes it kind of not profitable to trade with Russia or to make business in Russia. So it did affect economically the Central Asian countries, but otherwise I don't see how it can further damage anything around. Of course, Belarus is a different story, but it has its own problems, and it's just completely different from any other countries that surround Russia right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And just territorially, in terms of which countries Russia may have designs on, Kazakhstan is one, but Uzbekistan and the other three Central Asian nations don't border Russia, because Kazakhstan does, and it's between them and Russia. So there are no territorial pretensions there, at least that I know of. Okay, thanks very much for those questions, and I will wrap it up now. I'll be back next Monday for another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia. And please keep an eye out for my newsletter, The Week in Russia, on Friday. Thanks for listening, and thanks for participating, Irina.
Thank you.